everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Confessions of a Rare Disease Mama. I am your host, Jillian Arnold. Late to the party. I know I've been a bit MIA the past few months. We had a lot of stuff going on. We had Stella's birthday the beginning of January, and then the beginning of February, we did her Make-A-Wish trip to Disney World, which was, oh my gosh, it was the best time. I know some people are like diehard Disney fans, and like, yeah, I love Disney movies. I love Disney. But I'm not like obsessive. So I didn't have like the highest expectations for this trip, but it just blew me out of the water. I mean, we had the best week ever. It was just incredible. No, you know what? It was magical. It was magical. I know they say Disney is the most magical place on earth. And let me tell you, it really is. I'm going to kind of go more in depth with our Disney trip on a future episode. Probably have my husband come on with me and just recap everything we did and share any little tips and tricks we learned about accessibility in Disney and, you know, traveling with our two kids. So stay tuned for that. A couple other little highlights. I haven't talked to you guys in so long. I feel like I have so much to catch you up on, but I'm not going to catch you up on a lot because we have a really great episode, which I want to get into very soon. But one other thing, pretty major, at least in my opinion, is that Roman lost his first tooth. Oh my God. I feel like we were so excited like when he lost it, but oh my gosh, it just makes me feel like my baby is definitely not a baby anymore. Like he's almost six. That's insane. And I honestly got a little emotional when his toothy fell out because it's just like hitting those little like normal moments in life. Like those are just things that I didn't know or think that I would get to experience with him. So I feel like they're even more special than I know it's a big deal when any kid loses their first tooth, but it was like, I feel like me and Donald were like almost in tears. Like it was just so cute. And he looks adorable with his little missing tooth. We also found out that our current nurse that we have is scaling back her hours because she got a job at a hospital, which we're super bummed about. But we are also happy for her because she's doing what's best for her family. But we are really going to miss seeing her every day. With that being said, though, we just hired a new nurse that is actually starting tomorrow. So she seems really sweet. So hopefully that all works out well. So let me give you guys a little background before we get into this conversation here. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Madeline Cheney from one of my favorite rare disease podcast called The Rare Life. And I was so excited to talk to her. I felt like we had such a great conversation. And every podcaster's worst nightmare happened to me. After we wrapped up, I'm trying to go back in and find the conversation so I can like export it to an MP3 so I can upload it, all that good stuff, all the techie stuff. And I couldn't find it. I found it, but it wouldn't download. And I tried and tried and tried for like weeks before I reached out to her because I was so embarrassed because this has literally never happened to me before. And it's always like the biggest fear of mine is I'm going to take up this person's time and like have this wonderful conversation and then it doesn't record for some reason. So needless to say, I was like freaking out and I ended up reaching out to her after I had literally tried everything like YouTube videos, just everything, like searching my computer high and low. And she was so sweet and like offered to re-record it. But I think we were both kind of bummed because we really had a great conversation. And I feel like there's a lot of things in this conversation that so many of you guys can probably relate to. And we kind of talked about like so many different things. So anyways, she offered to re-record it and we were between both of our schedules, it was very difficult to try and coordinate a time. And I had almost given up. And then a couple weeks ago, I was like thinking of this conversation. I was like, you know what? I'm going to just try again. I'm going to get on my computer and like pull out all my freaking techie moves, which there, I don't have a lot of techie moves. But I somehow... I think I just like willed it into fruition. Like somehow it just appeared. And I did the same thing that I was doing months before. And this time it worked. So I was so happy when I finally recovered the conversation. I like text her right away and she was really excited. So I feel like that was a sign that that I was able to recover this. It was a sign that I needed to put it out into the world. It's my first episode back after a few month hiatus. But just as you're listening, this was recorded, I think, in November or December. I want to say, okay, I lied. I just looked at my calendar and it was actually recorded originally in September of last year. So that is a good... September, October, November, December, January, February, March. 6 months. It was a good 6 months ago. So anyways, loved the conversation. Love Madeline. If you guys haven't checked out her podcast, please do. It is, we talk about some of my like favorite episodes in the conversation that I'm going to link in the show notes. So anyways, I'm going to stop rambling and let's just get into it. I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. Hello, Madeline.
Hi.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I'm super excited for our conversation today. Just really excited to talk to you.
Me too. I can't wait.
Yes. So I want to kind of just dive right in and let's start with you. Can you just kind of give a little background on yourself, your family, your husband, all that good stuff?
Yeah. So I am a Washington State native, but now I live in Utah with my family, my husband, Justin. We've been married for 10 years. And then we have two children. Wendy came first, and she has no medical issues, super healthy and everything. Mm-hmm. And then a couple years after her came Kimball, and he is a rare guy. So he has a rare syndrome called chondrodysplasia punctata. And so in the first couple years, he was very medically unstable. We were in and out of the hospital all the time, tons of appointments, the whole spiel. But then as he grew, now he's five. He's really stabilized medically. And so he'll always be disabled, right? Like he has dwarfism, he's hard of hearing, he's partially blind, he has hypotonia. So he has like still some stuff lingering from that, but yeah. Medically he's super stable. And so I feel like, we've talked about this before. I respect you so much for the fact that you are doing this podcast and helping others right now while you're in the thick of it. Because I always tell my husband, I'm like, I couldn't do that. Like I had to like kind of take a breath, do therapy. And then I was like, okay, now I want to like help others and give back. And so that's why I started the podcast 3 years ago. And so, yeah. That's us.
So how old was Kimball when you started the podcast? Cause you've been doing it for a few years now, right?
Yeah. So it was like released on his second birthday. So he was exactly two. Okay. And it's so funny. Cause I was like, oh, I'm like, I've healed so much. I can do this. And now looking back, I'm like, I still had a lot of healing to do. And I really think the podcast had a huge part in that of like processing stuff that we'd been through by talking to other people, which I'm sure you can relate with.
Yes. 100%. That was actually going to be one of my questions for you was just has the podcast been like a nice outlet for you to kind of process a lot of those feelings? Cause I'm the same way. I'm very much like, I like to talk through things, and I started the podcast even before I started like really seeing like a therapist. So I felt like the podcast kind of was my therapy in a way. And by the way, that's amazing that Kimball's doing so stable right now. I love to hear that.
Oh, thank you.
And to answer your question, I don't know how I'm doing it. I'm just doing it. Like it's obviously a lot with both my kids, but I'm not nearly as organized and like thoughtful as yours is. Mine is kind of just like, hey, I got a little time today and I have something I want to talk about. So I'm going to go downstairs and record for 20 minutes.
Yeah. I think both are valuable, like in different ways. Cause I think it's like really great to have someone who's like literally going through it with you. Sometimes I feel this like definite, all the time I feel survivor's guilt of like, oh my gosh, you know, Kimball stabilized. But like for a lot of these families, like their kids are only getting less stable or like, you know, it's just a very different trajectory. And so I feel some guilt in that. But I think, I don't know, I think both perspectives have a lot of value of like, she's going through it with, with me right now. She just got out of a hospitalization and so did I. Yeah. And so I think, I think they're different, but I think they're both needed.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So what kind of like, obviously your son and your journey with him probably was a lot, if not all of the inspiration for starting The Rare Life, but what kind of led you to kind of take the leap and start the podcast, and has it kind of like evolved somewhat from what you started doing to like kind of something else, or did you have a vision for it and you just went for it?
I mean, I was thinking about that this morning in prep for this interview, and I think there was like several things that kind of led to it, but one of those things was like wanting to like, so I'd been doing therapy and I was like, I finally feel like myself again, kind of getting out of like that trauma fog. Mm-hmm. And that was a really exciting feeling. And I was like, wait, I want this for like other people too. Like, I feel really lucky to have this. And so I toyed with some different ideas initially of like how to help the community. Like, oh, I made this like, it's kind of fun. I almost feel like I was like a little kid then, like in perspective I have now, but like, oh, I had like this collar I sewed for Kimball because he had an unstable cervical spine. And so I like sewed this thing for him and I was like, that was so much more comfortable. I'm going to share that with the world. That was kind of like my first thing of like, and I'll make a blog and that will be how I share it. Mm-hmm. And, or I'll make a clothes with like a store for, I'll design clothes for kids with dwarfism was like, that was an idea I had. But yeah. Then I think it was the kind of the realization of like, wait, it was like the therapy that helped me so much. And so like that was something I wanted to be able to scale and give to more people. And so really that's always been like the main goal, or like the thing that I always go back to is like, how can I make this as therapeutic as possible? And yeah, just in my personal life, like in both in therapy and like being able to talk it out and like share, like, wow, I didn't even know I was thinking that, like by talking it out in a safe space was so empowering, or like so key in my healing and processing. Mm-hmm. And then that paired with like how alone I felt the whole time, I think that really was kind of traumatizing in its own way. Like, I'm going through this horrible ordeal and I don't know anyone else who's been through this or is going through it. So it was kind of like we need the processing, the trauma thing by talking about it and the stuff you don't necessarily want to talk about, while also like, and here's my community of like other, like I'm listening to this right now, this mom talk about how horrible this thing is. And I feel it too. And so not only am I being like validated in how I feel, but I'm also like she's feeling it too. Like we're processing it together. And so I think that's, like with a lot of the episode planning, I try not to get too like nitty gritty. There'll be some episodes that are like, you know, tips for advocating for your kid in the medical setting, just because I do feel like that influences our lives a lot. But like, I try to stay more with like, and how does it feel to have to always advocate? You know, how does that impact you emotionally to have to always advocate?
Yeah. I think it's just so powerful just learning from other people's stories. And like you said, just that sense of just not feeling so alone. Cause I think that's something that every rare disease parent, medically complex parent goes through, after a diagnosis is just like, you feel like you are the only person in the world that is going through this. And podcasts for me were a way for me to get that sense of community before I don't know. I was a little different. Like right after Roman was diagnosed, I didn't feel ready to actually talk to other parents. I don't know if you went through that too, but
yeah, definitely.
I definitely went through like just months and months of, and it was hard too, because I feel like everyone around me was like, you need to talk to people, like you need to meet some other parents and all this stuff. And I just didn't feel emotionally ready at that point. I think I just needed time to take it all in. And like, I don't want to say I was in like denial, but I think I just needed time to process and come to terms with like, okay, this is our life now. And podcasts were a good way for me to kind of experience that community without actually conversing with humans.
Yeah. That's very passive.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, and that was kind of like one of my driving forces for starting my podcast was I wanted to do that for other parents because I know how much it helped me.
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
But on that topic of like just isolation and everything, it just, what you were talking about before made me think of, I am going to bring up some of your episodes because there's just so many, like for all my listeners, if you guys don't listen to The Rare Life, please stop my podcast right now and listen to an episode because it is like every episode just like hits home for me. And I love that you have so many different perspectives and different parents, you know, on that. It's just amazing, like every single episode. But what you were talking about before, I think it was, I want to say it was the story of Claire, that episode. And I'm sorry if this isn't the right one, but there was a parent on there that was talking about after her child's diagnosis, like her family was trying to meet up for lunch or something like that should be so easy. And her sister was like, well, why can't you just meet us there in 10 minutes or something along those lines? And she said, was talking about at that moment, she realized like how vastly different her life was to her peers and like her family. And I feel like I definitely had many of those moments, like after Roman's diagnosis, just like, okay, my family is trying to understand, but they really have no clue, like what we're going through, how difficult it is to leave the house, like with all the things. And I wanted to ask you, like, did you ever have a moment like that after Kimball's diagnosis where you just, it kind of just all hit you, like how different your life was to your peers? And
I mean, I know exactly the moment you're talking about with the story of Claire, and you were right. That is
okay. It was name. That one.
Totally,
I couldn't
right.
remember.
That's one of my favorite.
I love that.
She's
episode.
So great. Oh, yeah. She's so great. But like, yeah, I mean, one like very vivid memory, was like right off the bat when I was pregnant with Kimball and we had our anatomy scan ultrasound. And that's when they saw a lot of like concerning characteristics of like, oh my gosh, you know, they were like, we think he has Down syndrome. So that's kind of like, that's where we were for a week. We thought he had Down syndrome. So I remember calling my siblings and telling them about this and telling my mom and stuff. And I don't even remember what they were saying, but I think they were trying to like cheer me up, like, oh, it'll be fine. Or like, you know, oh, that'll be so great. How sweet. And I was like, they have no clue what's going through my head right now. Like, the fact that they can just be like, oh, look on the bright side. Da, 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 da. I was like, I'm in such a dark place right now of like spiraling of like, I'm thinking about like, oh, he'll never leave the house. Like, we'll never be like empty nesters. He'll never, like, we'll never have like, I mean, I was also basing this off of like probably incorrect my perception yeah. of yeah. what Down syndrome was, but, right. but like, you know, we'll never have like an actual conversation, like a deep conversation, like I pictured, you know, having with my kids. And like, it was just like and also Izzy, you know, well, I think at that point, I didn't think he was going to die from it until later we got his real diagnosis. And then that entered the picture too. And it was like, you guys have never, you've never experienced this before. And I think it was really jarring, especially to know that like my mom had never experienced it and she couldn't give me like the, oh, honey, you know, when I got that diagnosis, I just XYZ, like she had no yeah. experience in it. And I think it probably felt scary to her too. Like I'm picturing from her point of view to yeah. be like, got nothing for you. Like I've never been through this. So I think that, like, just that initial, like, hey, guess what? We have a disabled child, right? Like, that's really what it was. That was the phone call. And the responses were like, you have no idea. And then I think that just set the tone for the rest of, like, the set first, especially in the first few years of, like, they ain't got no clue what this is like.
Yeah. It's funny too, because I feel like you go to your mom for, at least me, I go to my mom for everything, all the advice, all the things, especially when it comes to, like, after we have our first baby, you don't really know what you're doing. So I'm calling my mom every 5 minutes. Like, is this normal? Is this normal? Mm-hmm. And I think it's something you don't really think about, how hard it probably is for them as your mom to not know what to say or what to do, or they can't give you the advice because they themselves haven't been through it. I know my mom, she taught for 30 years, like in elementary school, and never really came in contact with like a tube fed child or a child in like a stander, which I find absolutely ludicrous. But randomly enough, the summer before I had my son, she had retired like earlier that year. This is kind of a tangent, but she retired earlier that year and she ended up subbing, like picking up subbing gigs just for like extra cash. And she had randomly like started working pretty regularly in a classroom with, it was like a special needs classroom for kids, all sorts of different disabilities. And that was the first time she ever saw like a stander or like kids in, and not the first time she ever saw a kid in a wheelchair, but like she came in contact with all this new equipment that she had no idea her grandkids would be using in the future. So I don't know. I always think back on that. I'm like, that's so weird. Like maybe that was like the universe preparing her for her grandkids, but I totally, cool. I totally understand.
One thing too, I just realized also, as you were saying that, I was like, I mean, I can empathize with our, you know, our collective moms that don't understand, because I'm like, that's how I feel about Kimball. Like,
yeah.
I don't get what it's like to be disabled or to have all these medical issues. Like, I sometimes will go there and then I have to really quickly pull back. I don't know if this is, that's like the darkest place I can go is like, what was that like for him? And when he was a baby, I'd lay in bed just feeling so anxious, thinking like, oh my gosh, he's struggling to breathe. He can't breathe very well because he probably should have gotten a trach, but he didn't.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, he can't breathe. And I felt myself like not really being able to breathe. So I think like, but then at the same time, it's like, we just don't know what it's like to be them. And so I think that can be a scary part of it too. Like, how do I help them navigate this when I've never been through it myself?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I never really thought of that, but yes, it's the same thing. And I was actually just getting a little anxiety listening to you talk about the breathing thing. So I'm like, I feel like I can't breathe, because I go through that too with my son, because he's a very noisy breather and everything's okay with his breathing for the most part. It's just very noisy, but I always like the way he breathes. It kind of sounds like he's like continuously gasping for air. And I'm just like, what is that like? Like it just gives me anxiety. Even like thinking about it, I'm like, I don't know how that feels for him. And oh gosh. So after Kimball was diagnosed, I know like a lot of parents I talk to, I feel like everybody has like their thing that they either, some parents will just dive headfirst into like research. Some people dive into Facebook groups. Some people go into Google. Some people like dive into fundraising. Some people curl up in a ball and are super depressed for months on end. What was your kind of like initial reaction to learning about Kimball's diagnosis?
I think like it kind of was in different stages. It was just a complete roller coaster, like a nightmare roller coaster you can't get off. But like, because at first, you know, we thought he had Down syndrome. That was for 1 week. It was like the longest week of my life. I like jumped into all like the Facebook groups and like, okay, look at all these cute kids with Down syndrome. Like, okay, like maybe we can do this. Like, look at all these other families doing this. And then like a week later, they came back. The genetic testing came back negative for all like the most common syndromes. So like, oh, it's something really rare. And I was like, you know, that's when we got submerged into that whole realm. And I think, side note, I think that's honestly one of the reasons that like I also wanted to start this community, which I'm sure you relate with, is like kind of like, hey, like the Down syndrome community is huge. Like, they're bustling. Everyone knows what that is. But, like, yes, we need, like, a collective, like, we need to get all the outcasts and, like, bring them together.
Yeah.
But anyway, I, you know.
I relate. Tangent. Yes.
But, like, so once we actually got, like, the correct diagnosis, and I was still pregnant with him. So we didn't know it for sure, but that was what we were guessing based on, like, what they were seeing. And, I mean, I would say I was, like, definitely very, like, overwhelmed and depressed, depending on, like, what was happening at that point. I remember there were lots of things, like, there's this one, like, meeting we had with the palliative care team, and they had this, the horrible, horrible conversation about, like, quality of life questions. And, like, basically they were asking, like, at what point would you withdraw care and let him pass away? Like, you need to be thinking about, like, what goals you have for your family. Like, do you love to travel? Would that hold you back? At what point would you let him go? Is it more selfish to keep him, you know, while he's, like, suffering, or is it better to, like, keep fighting to the end? And I was like, these are questions that are the, like, the darkest, scariest things I've ever been faced with in my life. So that in particular, I crawled in bed and I was just a mess for, like, a few days. I'm just like, this is the worst I've ever felt. Mm-hmm. Because I had to really come face to face with, like, the idea of him, not only him passing away, which we already knew that was, like, there was a really good chance of him dying that we didn't understand then, because the research now has caught up a bit, but we knew there was, like, a good chance. Now I'm like, I can't believe he made it. But anyway, we had to take a really good hard look at that. And not only that, but, like, how would I ever make that decision? Mm-hmm. Like, what a horrible place to be in as a parent. Like, no parent should ever. And I still stand by that. I think that's a horrible, horrible thing to even imagine, of, like, having to make that decision of, like, do we continue fighting or do we let them go? I mean, it was just stuff I was so sheltered from this kind of thing. And so it was just, I think in that way, I definitely went to a really dark place.
Yeah.
And then as far as, like, handling the diagnosis itself, like, I just remember reading through, like, the one paper they had on it, because it's so rare. And so I was like, okay, well, this is the information we have to go off of. And there is information I deleted from my brain. Like, it is the craziest thing. So I just realized this, like, probably a couple months ago. So I was, okay, this is a tangent of a story. But I guess this is what I was doing. This is what my brain did. In the research, it says that they can sometimes have, the list of symptoms, you know, of it, like the hard of hearing and, you know, hypotonia and then unstable neck and the no nose bone, da, 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 da. But then it also says, and intellectual disabilities, like, as, like, a, like, an optional part of it. Mm-hmm. And I, like, blocked that from my mind. I think, like, now looking back, I'm like, I remember reading this. And I remember saying, we'll deal with that when we get there. We'll get there when we get there. We're focusing on the things that will keep them alive. Like, I'm not even going to think about that right now. Cause that right there, I think, is a huge, that's its own animal, right? It's like grieving that.
Yeah.
And so for the next 5 years of Kimball's life, I would be at, like, appointments with specialists. I'd be, like, with his therapist. I'd be like, he'd be behind on milestones. I'd be like, well, like, it, but it's not associated with his syndrome. Like, they don't have intellectual disability. So, like, if he does, it would be a completely separate thing. Wouldn't that be, like, super rare for that to happen? They're like, oh, that's true. So I guess he doesn't. And, like, this has been a question on the table for 5 years. And later I was like, I don't even know what brought it up, but I was looking at, like, the few papers that they have on it. And I was like, Justin, it's right here. It says it right here. That's a, like, part of the syndrome. And I realized, I was like, I totally read that.
It's funny. Your brain was probably your brain was probably just, like, prioritizing. Like,
yeah,
I can't even deal with that right now. We just got to get through this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
That's
my, that's all I can, anyway, I felt ridiculous. I was like, I need to text all the therapists that I had this conversation with, be like, guess what? That really could be it. We still don't super know. That's kind of like a question that's always been on the table, but.
Anyway. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about, like, Kimball's diagnosis and what all it entails? I know you kind of touched on some of his issues, like vision and hearing and stuff, but mm-hmm. what is, like, the typical lifespan and how rare is it?
Yeah. So there are 125 known cases in the world. At least there was when they wrote this paper, I think like 8 years ago,
Wow.
maybe 10 years ago, because it was actually just like discovered or whatever. Like they didn't have a name for it and stuff. But so it's very rare. But like within, so like there are some characteristics. It's technically like a type of skeletal dysplasia, which means like just like the skeletal system, the bone. So he has dwarfism, so all of his long bones are shorter. So he's just a little guy, which I think is so cute. And then no nose bone, so like the bridge of his nose, that's one thing that they noticed on ultrasound. So super narrow airway in his nose. And then the deafness, the blindness, I don't know, a super rare birth defect. Like it's classic with his syndrome, but like I don't think I've ever met or like heard of another syndrome that this is like associated with. But like the vertebrae and his cervical spine didn't harden, like up by his skull, like the really like up in your neck, right? So it's like really important to like it's like its job is to protect your spinal cord from like compressing, and they were soft when he was born. So like he just that was. I think that was definitely one of the most traumatic things to live with, was just like the risk of like when he's not wearing his big cervical like collar, if he fell, he could be like become paralyzed or die. Like just his chin going to his neck really hard, he could die. And so that was like this constant thing like looming over us. And that since then has resolved, which was a huge sigh of relief. But then he also has hypotonia, so he was very late in walking. He trips a lot to this day. He falls all the time. His little knees are like constantly bloody. So we're like, is this hypotonia? Is this his vision loss? Like, I'm not really sure. It's probably a combo. Anyway, I feel like when I'm listing out the stuff, it's kind of like, okay, like, I don't know, like the laundry list. Yeah. So like those are, he was tube fed because of hypotonia, but.
Is he still tube fed or?
No. So he weaned off of that, and he cried when we took it out because he was attached to it, which I thought was really sweet. And I just remembered your other question of like the life expectancy, and so that's something that like I mentioned before. Now we're getting more research, like just case by case. They're adding into the case study of like, oh, and they also can have brain bleeds, like even in utero. And so it turns out that this condition, it often the babies don't make it all the way to birth. And I knew that like they were like, oh, 30% of them don't make it. But it's like, oh no, I think this syndrome's actually not that rare, and that they usually will pass away before they're born from brain bleeds. And so Kimball does not, he doesn't struggle with brain bleeds. And so I think that's the only reason he made it. But I'm a carrier for his syndrome, as you know. So that's been like a whole thing of like, the syndrome's not just relevant to us of like, okay, like, what it means for Kimball, but also for future kids. Because once they make it out of like those first few years, it's very typical for them to be, they're like, they're fine. Like they still have the various like disabilities. Like he'll always have dwarfism. He'll always be hard of hearing. He'll always be partially blind. But like, once they get out of those first few years, like I think the life expectancy is like pretty much typical. So once you can get them to that point.
Yeah, it sounds like there's probably a lot of complications when they're little, and I'm just so glad that he's doing stable. And what was it like? 'Cause I know it sounds like you got his diagnosis while he was still in utero, like while you were still pregnant with him. So I can kind of relate to that because, as you know, I was pregnant with Stella, our daughter, when we got Roman's diagnosis. So I was aware during my whole pregnancy with her that there was a chance she would have ASMD as well. And I know what kind of stress that put on me. We went back and forth on like, do we do an amniocentesis or not? Like, is it really going to change anything if we know? We like met with a doctor about it, and we ended up opting to not do the amniocentesis and just have her tested at birth. But it's like, in a way, I don't know which would have been worse, like finding out that she has it while I'm still pregnant with her or waiting till she's born. Like, there's no right answer. But I know what kind of stress it put on me, just like having that weight on my mind while I was pregnant with her and caring for Roman at the same time, and like dealing with a new diagnosis. So what were your feelings being pregnant and knowing that your child had this diagnosis? And how did you kind of deal with that through your pregnancy? And did you kind of explain to your daughter? Because I know, how much older is Wendy?
2.5 years older.
Okay. So she was only 2.5 at the time. So like, mm-hmm. did you prepare her at all for Kimball's arrival or his medical condition? Like, how did you handle that?
Honestly, I'm like, oh, what did we? I think we just told her that he would be in the hospital for a while before coming home.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of where we left it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the conversations we also had with the palliative care team of like, you'd have a plan of like how to rush Wendy to the hospital if it's clear he's not going to make it so she can at least meet him. And like these harrowing things are just like, oh, that's like the worst thing I could ever think of.
Yeah.
But I think we just left it at, you know, we'll be at the hospital a lot and didn't like explain. I think partially because we were like, it's kind of like we're just going to see like what's going to happen, you know, once he's born.
Take it day by day.
I'm trying to remember the beginning. Oh, what it was like to be pregnant and know. Honestly, like I mentioned, like it was such a dark time to be like, oh my gosh, like what's going to happen? It's this diagnosis. No, it's this one. No, it's this one. Now you're going to this doctor. Now this doctor. But honestly, like after like interviewing a lot of other parents who found out as their child's like being born and they're like, oh my gosh, they're not breathing. Rush them off to the NICU. What's happening?
Yeah.
Like, I think I feel a gratitude for the way it happened that I probably wouldn't otherwise if I hadn't heard all those stories of like, oh, you know what? Like, I agree with you. I don't think there's any like perfect way to find out or like stage to find out.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that knowing that he had medical issues going into birth was really, really helpful. Like, honestly, I can say that like his birth was, I don't even know that I'd call his birth traumatic because like I had to be like as a scheduled, induction so the doctor could be there, like that special doctor and it was at the best hospital and all those kind of things and like that the NICU ready but like I think because the team like we've been meeting with the team and like hey we need the ENT we need you know, all these different people like I felt like okay we're prepared for this at least it's to some extent and so when he was born and I didn't get to hold him and they just whisked him off I was like yep that's what we were planning
it's like
they're waiting for Justin you know
as prepared as you could be
My heart was prepared for that. Like, this is not going to be the same kind of birth I had with Wendy. Like, I already, like, in a way, grieved that already. And so I think it was actually a really awesome birth. Like, all things considered, like after listening to a lot of birth stories, I'm like, you know, I have very, like, almost fond memories of his birth. I mean, the NICU, that's a whole different story, and that was hell. But the birth, I mean, went as well as it could have. So,
yeah.
I think a lot of that is because I had time to prepare.
And I know you mentioned palliative care and that like really tough discussion you had with them after he was born. What has your experience been with palliative care? Like, is that a team that you guys meet with regularly still? Like, what were your feelings surrounding palliative care? Because I know me and my husband felt some kind of way about the team we met with initially. And it kind of reminded me of like what you were talking about. Like, I almost felt a little off put by them and like the questions that they were asking, but I don't know if that was just me not ready to talk about that kind of stuff. I don't know. I'm just curious to know what your thoughts are.
I mean, like, I have some friends on that palliative care team now. Like, we have one on our board and I interviewed one of them. But I have to say, more along the lines of like what you felt, like I think it was definitely like a fire hose before it was necessarily even appropriate.
Yeah.
Like, thinking back, I'm like, because they met with that meeting we had, I had just found out that he had this rare syndrome. Like, I was still pregnant with him. We still had like 10 weeks to go. And so I think like, yeah, like it's probably important to be thinking about like being prepared in some way for like the option of like, oh, you know, I need to think about this. Like, what if he doesn't make it? What am I going to do with Wendy? Like kind of planning some things like that. But I do feel like it was very traumatic to be sitting in that room with like these, like, I don't know, 8 people telling us all these things and like all these questions we need to think about. And like, just being like, my life, like it feels so unbearable. Like, I just can't do this. And so honestly, like, I think that scene of like, this is such a hard, like such a horrible, impossible topic that I'm trying to process in front of all these people prematurely too. I think they should have waited till there was like, I was like, we didn't really necessarily need that conversation. It turned out luckily, like, because we were lucky, but like that was part of the motivation of making like these last in, like in my current season right now, we were doing like a three-part series about like child loss, like, and like one of those is like the logistics of like, here's what you need to do, like, or be thinking about if your child's going to pass away or they're likely to, partially because I'm like, process this by yourself, like go on a walk or like be in a private place, lay in bed crying while you're listening to this instead of being in this room in a hospital with eight strangers staring at you and telling you this stuff. Like, I think that that kind of information like is kind of ideal for a podcast episode. So you're not like, I don't know. Gosh. I think that made it that much worse.
I do want to get into those episodes a little bit, but real quick, I just wanted to tell you like a brief story about our introduction to palliative care, because it was not ideal. And I do feel like it was maybe not the most appropriate time. But our kids, as you might know, they're on a couple different treatments, and we're at the hospital every other week. They get infusions. It's an enzyme replacement therapy. So my daughter had just started. This was her first infusion. And I think that they were trying to make it easy for us. Like, oh, we'll come to you. And they made it seem like, you know, we're just going to come, like, introduce ourselves. We're like, okay, we'd never dealt with palliative care. We didn't really know what to expect. And long story short, that whole day was just utter chaos, because we have two kids trying to manage infusions. Me and my husband are like bouncing. They had us in separate rooms, so we're going from room to room. So we weren't even together in the same room. They came and like talked to me, and then they talked to him, and there's like nurses coming in and out. It was just like a hot mess. And I think it just left a not great taste in my mouth about palliative care. But, and I know palliative care is amazing and so many people rave about it. I just think our first experience was not ideal. And yeah, I remember them asking us similar questions, like, when will you know enough is enough with them in terms of treatment and stuff? And I'm just like, my daughter is receiving her first infusion today. Like, this is not, I'm not in the headspace to talk about this, nor do I want to talk about it. In that period of time, I was still very much like optimistic. Like, you know, you're realistic, you know, I knew what the disease was, but we are starting these treatments and there was a lot of like optimism. And I just feel like it put an unnecessary like heaviness in the air. And I don't know, we've met with them since then. I just remember like when we came home, my husband was, he was not happy about like how all that went down. I'm like, we weren't even in the same room together. Like, we should have been together having this conversation. And
yeah, like, this is a really intense questions.
Yeah, it was just, and it just really caught me off guard. And like, I don't know, it just kind of put, like I said, put a bad taste in my mouth. But since then we've had like Zoom, we do Zooms with them occasionally and, you know, just chat about where we are. And it's been a better experience that way. So I'm giving them some grace, but it was just not a pleasant first encounter.
Well, I think like, honestly, like, just obviously they're professionals. Like, you have a social worker and a nurse practitioner and like whatever, but it's like, you're obviously not doing this because you were a parent at one point in this, you know, this realm. And so now you're, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, you're obviously, you haven't done this before, or you would know like, oh, heck no, we're not going in there while they're doing their treatment. I don't know, like, kind of like, oh, sweet, you don't understand what this is like at all.
Yes, you know? Yes. And I think the fact that there's so many of them that come, like, I think we had like four people come in, and it's like a little intimidating. Yeah. And especially if you're by yourself, and like, my husband wasn't there. I don't know, it just seemed a little intimidating. And I know that that's not at all what they're trying to do. I know they were coming from such a good place, but it just wasn't a good experience.
I think we're onto something. I think the number, I think that felt like you're like in this, like this board meeting or something. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is so intimidating.
It's like, it's like
maybe one or two at a time.
It's such a heavy topic and like serious things. Oh my God. Sorry. There's a spider.
You can take care of it.
I'm in my basement and
I'm in a closet under the stairs, so I'm sure there are lots of spiders in here. I just don't see.
I saw you post about that. I love that. I actually have a little space under our stairs. I'm like, should I do the same thing?
That's, I mean, like, it's kind of nice.
Nice and quiet.
Cozy, at least. Yeah. Don't allowed to go down the stairs.
But. So getting back, and that was like a little palliative care tangent, but I'm glad I'm not the only one that felt like that, because I felt a little, I've only heard like amazing things about palliative care, and me and my husband were both just like, was like, that was kind of messed up. Like, that was a weird experience.
Yeah. Totally.
We need to start like a parent palliative care tea, like some, more
tips for palliative care to use. Like, here's what you guys need to know. We love you. We're so glad you exist. Please remember these things.
Yes, for real. So I wanted to kind of just dive into a couple of my favorite episodes of The Rared Life.
How fun.
So first of all, since we kind of touched on the child loss, like anticipatory grief, that episode for me was like, it was heavy, but it was like a good heavy. Like I needed to hear that. It was like, I don't even have words for it. Like it was so comforting to hear from other parents. And I feel like you guys, it's such a heavy topic. And like you were saying, so many people shy away from it. And it's not, because it's not something you ever want to talk about. Nobody ever wants to talk about the possibility of their child passing away and what that looks like. And it is like the giant elephant in the room for a lot of us, like disability parents or parents of children with like terminal illnesses. And I wanted to ask you, first of all, it was done so well. I thought like the whole episode was done really well, and it came across as not scary. Like it was approachable, but I wanted to ask you, like, how did you guys come to the decision? And I say you guys, because I know you have like a board now, which is super exciting, and congratulations on the nonprofit. But how did you guys come to the decision? Like, this is something that needs to be talked about, and we're going to do it, because I would imagine it would be scary, and it's a scary topic to tackle.
Yeah. I think it was first like introduced in my head, 6 or 9 months before we started releasing those. So I'd been kind of stewing for a bit, but like, I had this group of like, it was almost like focus group type of thing, like of, listeners that were like, oh, we'll help share the podcast. And we'd meet every so often, and I'd ask for like, okay, what have you guys thought about the episode so far? What topics do you want to hear more of? So kind of like to get, ideas and stuff. And someone was like, have you ever done an episode just about our children dying? Like, have you ever like talked about that? And I was like, oh my gosh, I haven't. Like, I think that was like kind of a wake up call for me. Mm-hmm. Cause they were like, yeah, like you said, they were like, this is the elephant in the room, but like, do we ever like directly talk about it? And I was like, no, we haven't. Like, I think, the story of Claire that you mentioned, like that's the closest we've gotten, where she shared her particular story of like finding out that her daughter had a terminal illness. But like, other than that, we hadn't really faced it head on. And I had to do a lot of like soul searching with that and processing of that. Of like, yeah, like I pride myself in talking about the hard stuff. Like I pride myself in like, oh, we talk about the deep things. We're not going to skip around those things. And yet I had never done an episode like literally just about like our children passing away, which is what's on everyone's minds, right? Like that's like probably the most relevant topic. Yeah. That we could cover, whether it's, you know for sure that your child's diagnosis is life limiting, or there are accidents that can happen with that or complications. And so you don't know for sure, but it could be. And so I think like, I realized that I subconsciously was avoiding doing that, like, I don't know, like covering that topic.
Yeah.
Because it is such a hard topic. It really is. It's like, no one wants to think about that. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, we're going to do it. It's going to be really hard, but we're going to do it. And so there was a lot of thought and like making sure it was done well. So I mean, a lot to hear you say that, because it's such a big, important topic. And I remember like also like as I was planning it and like thinking about how we were going to do it, to be like, these are probably going to be like the most important episodes I ever make. And I there are a lot of other episodes that I really love, but I'm like, this is where it's at. No one's talking about this unless you're in a palliative care team meeting while you're trying to do infusions and they are like yelling it at you, you know, like,
right?
I don't know, like this is how we're going to do it. Right. And so there was a lot of, I don't know, my heart and soul went into those episodes because I knew like, this is,
you can tell,
so like, important.
Truly, you can tell. And I do think that it matters, like, when you're listening to, like,
mm-hmm.
talking to a palliative care team in the middle of infusion, that is not the time.
Right.
When I can put on a set of headphones and walk outside and be at peace, that's the time to listen to something like that and digest it. And I say this about all your episodes. I feel like all your episodes are so like meaty and I can never sit and just like binge listen because I'll listen to one. And then I like, honestly, like have to like, okay, let me digest that and like process my feelings around it. And I love that you're doing those weekly Zoom groups too.
The discussion like, groups. Yeah.
Yes. I love that. I did one so far, but I'm excited to do more because I feel like there's so much to unpack from your episodes, but it's weird because child loss is something that's been around since the dawn of time. And I know you guys talked about this on your episode, like even more so back in the day, like for our grandparents and their parents, like child loss was more common, but it still was like a taboo thing that you kind of didn't talk about. I know like my grandma had a stillbirth and they didn't even let her hold her baby. They just took her away. And like my grandma went into like a really, really intense depression to the point where she couldn't even like care for my mom and her brother for like months. Like she had to get a nanny to care for them because she was so depressed. And I don't know. I just like, it makes my heart hurt just like thinking of that because I'm like, I can't imagine going through something like that, but then like having your child ripped away, not getting any time to kind of like grieve your baby. And it just makes me so much more thankful for your podcast and like you having the courage to make episodes like that and allowing us the space to, you know, process those feelings on our own time.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's definitely, if you guys haven't listened to it, and I say this to my listeners, it's an important, I'm not going to lie, it is a heavy, heavy episode, but it's important, especially for parents that are, you know, have terminally ill children. It was really great to listen to. I haven't, go ahead.
Sorry. I think one thing like too, and then you say like, oh, you know, timing matters. Like I also am very aware that like, you know, these episodes also might be something that people are like, okay, it's there when I need it, when I'm ready. Cause I, you know, I don't know if I, you know, when I was pregnant with Kimball at that point, I don't think I was ready to really, really talk about those topics. And so I think that's a good example of like, okay, like I, you know, then wait a little bit. But that being said, I don't know if you felt this, but I've heard several people be like, it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be to listen to it.
Yeah, I do think that. And you're like reading my mind because I was about to say the child loss 101 episode. I personally do not feel ready to listen to that.
Yeah,
but it is comforting to know that it is there if should I need it.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I do agree. And before I started listening to that episode, I was very nervous to listen to it just because I knew what it was going to bring up emotionally for me. Like my heart was like racing. That's why I was like, I need to just go on a walk and listen to this. And yeah, it wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I'm so glad. That also makes me feel kind of like, I don't want to make people feel worse. Like that's never the goal, is to like, here, let me remind you how horrible things are and make you just like so upset. But I guess it kind of goes back to that whole goal of like therapy.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know about you, but like after I go to like a really good therapy session, I'm like, oh, I'm out for the day. Like I need to like really process what I just worked on and like kind of recoup from it. And so like, and then, but I also am aware of like, that's what helps,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the long run is like really being able to take a good hard look at those really dark spot.
That was something too I wanted to talk to you about. I know you bring up therapy a lot. I've done lots of different kinds of therapies, but I'd love to know what therapy means to you and how it's helped you so far in your journey.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, it's something that I am almost now realizing is kind of like a romantic relationship of like, oh, marriage is amazing. Marriage is awesome. And then the other people are like, I hate marriage. Marriage is the worst. I want to get out of this. And it's like, oh, it depends on the person and like the circumstances and stuff. So not all therapists are created equal. I am learning. But like, I just stumbled on this amazing therapist. Like I'm like, okay, that was like something in the universe. Cause I was just like, I need a therapist. I can't sleep because of all the trauma. I just need to sleep. So I need a therapist. And I just looked up a clinic that was closest to my house, said, who do you have available? And like, this is who they gave me. So
and it was a perfect match.
She was amazing. And in fact, I've recommended her. She's like helped Justin, my husband, and she's helped my mom and my little sister. And so like, it's kind of like this running joke in our family. She's like the celebrity therapist. But that being said, so I want to like give some room for this. So if other people are like, but I tried therapy and it was the worst and they were unhelpful and stuff, to be like, okay, like I'm acknowledging my privilege in having a really great therapist.
Yeah.
We also did this type of therapy that I'm like a huge proponent for. And I think it probably works better if you have like a really good therapist that knows really well how to do this, but it's called EMDR. Mm-hmm. Have you tried that one?
I have. Yeah. I've done a few. And I will say my first experience with it was like, it was really good. Like I just remember they do like the beats. So I had my headphone on and she basically just told me to sit and like with the listening to the beats, reflect on our journey so far, like from Roman's diagnosis to where we are present day. And I just cried. And it's weird because when I was finished, I was like, oh my gosh, it's been 4 years since Roman was diagnosed. And I have not once, because after a diagnosis, you know how it is. You're just like, go, 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 survival mode, like going to all the doctors, doing all the things. I never had time or space to just like sit in my feelings and reflect over all the trauma and the triumphs and accomplishments. Like it was very powerful. So yes, I'm definitely a fan of EMDR.
Yeah. No, I agree with what you said. Like, it's just so powerful to be able to like sit and like, I think like EMDR is just a way to go really deep into those experiences. Right. Cause like right now I'm doing like talk therapy for our current situation of like recurrent miscarriage and just like a whole IVF thing that we're dealing with right now. That's our current trauma that we're doing. But like, she'll be like, do you want to do EMDR about XYZ that you just mentioned? And I'll be like, no, let's do talk therapy. Because it's just like, I feel like talk therapy for me is like, okay, let's put the Neosporin on. Let's put the Band-Aid on. Like it helps and stuff. I feel like EMDR is like, let's get the scrub brush out. Let's get the antiseptic out. And we're scrubbing those wounds raw, which is like so painful because you have to go so deep into it. But it also, I mean, it's like scrubbing out the wound. It's like you really get, I guess a lot of results. I don't know. I just feel it's a very like a deeply healing thing, which is also very painful to work on. But I mean, like you asked like what the impact of that, I mean, like I started therapy so deeply traumatized and like a depressed shell of who I used to be before he was born. And we got that diagnosis. And then after we did therapy, I mean, it's like probably like your classic, like before and after, I was like, I finally feel like myself again. Like I feel like Maddie again. And I can actually start thinking about like, I even want to help other people, you know? And so I think that was the impact it had on me. And so it's a love story for that reason. Like, I'm just like, oh, therapy has been incredible for me.
And for those of you that don't know, a frequent guest that you have on is Amanda Griffith Atkins, who is a licensed therapist. Yeah. And she's also a rare parent. All her episodes are great. I love listening to you guys talk. And so maybe if she's someone awesome out there isn't quite ready for actual therapy, listening to those episodes with Amanda, I think is a great, like, dip your toe in the water.
Yeah. She gives the therapy, like the therapist perspective, which I'm really great. I'm like, you're my therapist on call because I don't really, I mean, like I've done therapy and I love therapy, but like, I'm not a therapist. So she can be like, oh, clinic, you know, your brain. Da, 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 da. I'm like, thank you. Yes, that's what that I wanted to know. Why is this happening to us?
So you touched on IVF, and I know we're like coming up on an hour. I don't want to take up too much of your time. So there's just a couple more things. How I know we've kind of talked a little bit about, like, you know, that I've been through the IVF process. We did our egg retrieval. We have 5 frozen embryos that are.
I forgot still, about that. Chilling on ice. I need to talk right to you now. About this. Wow. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
But where are you in your journey? I know you were toying with the idea of IVF. Last we talked, you were trying to figure out insurance and financial stuff, which is always so fun.
Yeah.
But where are you guys in that process, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah. So like physically, like, you know, like, I don't know, like logistically, we are like fighting insurance, and we're going to do like the whole appeal, whatever. Like my genetic counselor is like, oh, don't worry. We got this. I know exactly what to do. We have this huge case of like, here's how much Kimball will cost or costed you.
Yeah.
Here's how much you'll save by not having a baby born with this, which is like pretty horrible. I'm like, yeah, we'll do it. You need to. We'll frame it as like a financial decision that they can make. Like, pay $30,000 so you don't have to pay, you know, $500,000, whatever.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at right now. We're just kind of like playing the waiting game of like, you guys do your thing of keep, you know, fighting with insurance, and some, you know, I guess they denied it right away, but they're like, normal, we'll keep going back and forth. And so once, if that's approved, then we'll probably like start the process. But see, like, so that's where we are, like physically, logistically, but like emotionally, I am just like so torn between the desire for them to approve it and for them to deny it. Cause I'm like, please just tell me I can't. Please just tell me I can just like move on with my life and not do this, because IVF is like, my sister did IVF. She can't get pregnant. So it's not like a genetic thing. It's like a reproductive thing. Yeah. Yeah. Have your classic IVF story. And it was horrendous for her. She has PCOS. So she reminds me that like it was worse for me because of that. But like it was, I watched that thinking like, that's the worst thing that could ever happen to a person. I could never go through that. So I remember like they told us like way back when Kimball was like 1.5 years, and they're like, you're a carrier, you gave it to him, which was like the worst surprise ever. They're like, you have options. You could do, you know, stop having kids. Obviously you could do IVF, or you could just take the gamble and keep trying to have kids and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I remember when they said the IVF thing, I was like, I would never do IVF. Like that's off the table immediately. So after years of therapy and 5 miscarriages, come around to this point of like, hey, IVF, like let's talk. And so,
yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I feel like it's a very emotional thing to me where I'm like, I deeply long for that third child, like that person that I feel, is like missing from our family. Like I don't feel like we're complete yet.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I feel repulsed by the idea of doing IVF. Like everything inside of me is like, I can't do that. I'm not physically strong enough to do that. And I can't handle more trauma regarding having kids. Like I'm done being traumatized by, you know, Kimball's like the experience with Kimball, that was very traumatizing obviously, but then all the subsequent miscarriages of getting really attached to these babies and then them not, you know, not growing and not living. And so, I think like the idea that like the knowledge that I'm like, I'm not stupid. Like I know that like transfers fail. Like I know that we could do the whole thing and it still could not work. Yeah. And so I think that I feel repulsed by the idea of doing it. And then the whole like, and then like they could test for the, you know, the embryos and, you know, the carriers or the ones that have like the deletion, the syndrome, and throw them away. Like, and then I'm like, but that's Kimball. That's, we would have done that to Kimball. So it's like this big ethical thing. That's initially where I was like, I could never do that. And now I'm like,
oh, it's funny you brought that up, because I actually just, somebody just asked me on Instagram, because I was sharing a little bit about our IVF journey, and someone asked like, why, because I shared that we got 5 embryos and, one was affected, but they're all frozen right now. And somebody asked like, why did you freeze the affected one? And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like that's a little Roman or Stella. Like,
yeah,
but like, of course I'm going to freeze it. And it is, that was like that was what I struggled with the most, like going into this, was like, what do we do with the embryos that we don't use. We're obviously not going to have 4 more children. Like, that's not doable for our life. But like you, I have like, I've always had that strong desire, like, our family isn't complete without that third child. I just like feel it in my heart and soul. And you're right. Like the, at least for me, which I never put 2 and 2 together. I have PCOS too. So maybe that's why my like experience was so not good.
Just, sorry.
it wasn't as bad as I pictured, but it was really hard. Like the injections, and like, I literally felt like I was a crazy person for 2 weeks, like just crazy. And my kids were sick on top of it. It was just like, it was a horrible experience. So, I'm glad that part is at least over and done with. And like, we have the embryos, but like you, I do struggle. That was like what I went back and forth with so much, is like, what do we do with those embryos that we don't use? And it is like a weird ethical dilemma. I have, because it's hard to say like, we're not going to use them, discard them. Like, I feel like I couldn't do that. And I struggled with it. And I actually, one of Roman and Stella's nurses, she went through IVF, one of their infusion nurses. So we talk a lot about it, and she ended up with like 15 embryos, something crazy. And we talk about that like ethical struggle. And she had mentioned that there's something they can do where they basically like find a time that you're not ovulating or something, pretty much like implant them when your body doesn't have a chance to get pregnant or something. And then your body just kind of like takes
like period. Like it does what it would do. Yeah.
So I don't know. I felt kind of better hearing that. I don't know. It's
so not weird. Easy. It's like nothing. I mean, like for the history of the world, no one was grappling with this question. Like it's such a new ethical dilemma.
Yeah. It's hard. It's still hard. I still struggle with it. And I'm like, well, we have them. They're there now. And my thought is like, we'll deal with it when the time comes. But there's nothing easy about that decision. And I wish you luck if you guys end up going through with all of it, that everything works out for you.
I'll be like sobbing to you. I'll just be like, oh my gosh, did you go through this? XYZ thing.
And well, on that note too, your family planning episode, super, super helpful too. There's just so many episodes. All your episodes are helpful, but the family planning, I listened to that during a time where I was like really struggling with that. And it was so helpful to hear just other people's thoughts and opinions and, you know, experiences with, do I have another child? Do I not have another child? Because there's so many complicated emotions surrounding it, especially when you have kids with such medical complexities. There's just so many. That's like, I could probably dive in for another hour just on that. But
so complicated.
I do appreciate that episode. And by the way, I'm going to link all these episodes that we're talking about for my listeners in case anyone wants to go and like actually listen to them. I strongly suggest that. So I did want to talk about your self-care episode too, but we'll save that for maybe another time because we're over an hour right now. It's been so nice talking to you. But I'm going to ask you our last 2 questions that I ask every guest that comes on. What has been the biggest struggle for you as a rare disease parent?
I think it's definitely the trauma. Mm-hmm. And I would say the most traumatic thing, kind of going back to what we talked about at the very beginning, but like the idea of Kimball suffering and struggling.
Yeah.
And even going further than that, inflicting that, like making, I don't know. So like an example, he had these nasal stents that we had to shove into his little tiny, tiny nose to try to open it up so he could breathe. And they were like, I mean, yeah, these were really like an inch long, and he had just had surgery trying to open it up, but it failed. It didn't really work. And so we were like, I had to like push these stents into his nose while he was screaming and writhing. And like, you could tell it was like the most painful, uncomfortable thing. And his nose was bleeding. And I was like, this is the worst thing I've like ever been through, is having to not only like watch my child suffer, but like, I'm the one sitting here, like my husband's holding down his arms and legs so I can like do that. Like, he doesn't understand. Right. And he was a baby. So I feel like there's some benefits to him being younger. So like, I don't know, I think like as an older child, that'd be even harder, but like, I think it just changed me forever, and not necessarily in like a, I'm a different person, I'm so glad. It was like, I think it broke me in ways that I can never really heal from. Like, I've done therapy about it, but it's just kind of like, that is so against every instinct in my body. Like, I want to protect him and keep him safe and make him as happy and comfortable as possible. And so like, inflicting pain on him, or like, you know, even holding him down for blood draws and things like that. But especially like when I'm literally the one doing the thing, and I'm trying to do it to like help him live. Yes. Like, he needed the airway open and stuff. Like, but it's just a horrible situation to be in.
Which makes me think of the pain scale episode that you guys did. Cause I remember when we took Roman to see a specialist after he was diagnosed, they had to draw his blood for something. And it was so traumatic for me because they couldn't find his vein. They were like in there fishing around for God knows how long. It felt like 30 minutes, but in reality, it was probably like 30 seconds. I don't even know. But I just remember like, I was so traumatized because he was screaming and crying, and like they were holding him down and we had to do it again. And like, we left, like the second we walked out of that office, I just started bawling. And it's crazy when I think back on that, because that was kind of one of our first like traumatic blood draw experiences. And now he gets pricked every other week, and it's become like, I don't want to say I've become like numb to it, but those emotions don't pop. Like, now it's not really such a big deal. And it's like, I don't know, it's crazy how just time changes that perspective. But then like, a typical parent maybe would experience that same, you know, traumatic, those same traumatic feelings, like watching their child get poked for the first time or something. Yeah. I don't know. That was a really interesting episode to me too.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a big one.
And then last question, what is the most rewarding aspect for you of being a rare parent to your sweet little kids?
I mean, it's kind of all tangled up with just being a parent in general. Yeah. I'd say, you know, it's kind of hard to I think of like sweet moments with Kimball, and I'm like, I don't know that that's necessarily related to like his syndrome stuff, but I think it is. Like, I think it does. All the trauma and things that he's been through and I've been through with him, right? It's a different perspective, but we're going through it together. Like, and in fact, some of it I'm doing by myself, because he's not sitting there like, oh no, I'm worried about X, Y, Z. Like, I'm the one who like is very cognizant of all those things. But like, I think all the stuff that like I've watched him go through or gone through with him has changed our relationship fundamentally. Like, it's just a very different, relationship than I think we would have otherwise. Like, if he were healthy and typical, and obviously I have a very close relationship with my daughter too. I'm not saying it's like better, but I definitely think it has a different feeling to it. And so like, moments of seeing him really happy or just being able to be really close to him, like even just this morning, I dropped him off at kindergarten, and kindergarten has been like this big, like, oh my gosh, when he gets mainstreamed and he's not at the school for the deaf anymore, those kids better be nice to him.
Yeah.
And like, there is like this little kid that's like, do you want to be friends with me? And then Kimball said no, cause he wanted to sit with me for a while. I was like, play with him later, kid. You should still be nice to him. But like, we sat there and we were kind of snuggling together, and he was kind of nestling into me. And I was like, this is heaven. Like, this is the best thing ever. And so I think it's just like that contrast of like where we've been together, going back to like the whole, like the example of the blood draws or like the stent shoving in thing, where it's like, I've had to inflict this stuff on you. I've had to like allow you to go through this really horrible stuff. And I even gave this to you, right? Like, I don't, we could talk about that for a while too.
Gosh,
like,
this is
my fault that you're going through
so much to unpack.
Yeah. But then to like go full circle of like, but then like, here we are having, like, we're doing this together too. Like, we're also having this like really sweet experience where I would not appreciate it in the same way had it not been for all the trauma that we've been through.
Yes, that's beautiful. I can definitely relate to that. Is it like a different, like, I know Wendy is healthy, typical child. Like, is the connection between you and your daughter and then you and Kimball, like, is it different? Not necessarily one is better than the other. Obviously that's not the case, but it's, I would imagine it would just feel different.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And it's kind of hard to like, oh, what would this feel like? Because I know it'd also be different if they were both just typical kids or if they were both disabled, right? You have like different relationships with different kids just because they're different. But yeah, like it feels, I don't want to say deeper because I love Wendy so much. I'm obsessed with her. But like there is a depth to it, I think, that comes because of the trauma.
Yeah.
And like the protectiveness.
It's
that
like
was one thing.
You've been through like hell and back.
Yeah. And it's like, I am so deeply protective of him because he's literally fought for his life and I've literally had to advocate for his life. So it's like in a very real way, it's like the ultimate like mama bear feeling.
Yeah.
And so like, even if they're like fighting, this is something I need to work on. As one random stranger on Instagram told me, I'm going to F up my daughter. I'm like, thank you for telling me that. Let me go do some more therapy about how you just told me. You know nothing about the situation. But like, if they're like having an argument or something, I'll like catch myself. I'm like, I'm always siding with Kimball. I'm always I'm alone. I'm like, it's definitely the whole, I mean, he's younger than her.
Yeah.
He's really small. He's very like sensitive. And she's like this fierce, like she says she has her inner beast. And like, I relate with Wendy. Like we have our inner beast. But like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like there's definitely this part of me that's like really protective of Kimball. And so like, even at odds, I mean, yes, yeah, so it's a whole other layer to this too, because Wendy has come a long ways too, but she was very, very much a victim of everything that was happening to us too. And so
yeah.
She struggled so badly when Kimball was born, and she was constantly hitting him and punching him. And this little tiny baby that we're trying to keep alive. And like that right there, I mean, like, I've done a lot of therapy about that in particular, because, you know, feeling like this defensiveness of one child against another one, like, oh, here comes mama bear. But I'm like at the odds of like my other child. Like that was really horrible.
What a dilemma.
That's dilemma.
Have you, I'm assuming you've probably heard the term glass children.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something I was just recently introduced to, actually. And I'd never heard of that term. And then I like deep dove into all these TED Talks and stuff. And I feel like it's something, if and when we do have a third child, and, you know, hopefully they're healthy and a typical developing child, all that stuff, I feel like that's something I'll be so cognizant of.
Yes.
Just from, I don't know, because you don't think, well, I don't have experience with both my kids are obviously complex and stuff. But you don't always think about how it's affecting your other child.
Yeah.
You know, because most people are so focused on their child.
I would push back on that. I would say, I think that, I don't know, this is my guess, I would say that probably most parents are very aware of how it's affecting that child. But at least for me, like, I knew it. I was like, she is in so much pain right now and she needs so much of me, but I literally have nothing to give her. I am in like complete survival mode. So I had this, I have to focus on Kimball. Like, I physically have to take him to this appointment, right? Like, I can't just be like, sorry, we're not, I mean, I could have for some of them, but that didn't feel like an option. And I emotionally didn't feel like I had anything to give her. And so it was survival mode to the max, and this immense guilt of that I was failing this child that I loved. So, I mean, I still do, loved so deeply. And, you know, it's just us two before Kimball was born.
Yeah.
So like, we had a very close relationship, and then I, I resented her so badly for needing me so much at that time, which is so messed up too, because I'm her mom. But anyway, it's a whole thing.
Yeah. I know. I understand that. And maybe, you know, I don't have that. It's a different experience for me because both of my kids have a diagnosis. But yeah, when I have that, when and if the third child comes along, I don't know. I feel like it'll be whole new experience. And
I think I think you'll be good at it because right now you're thinking about it right now. I think that's like a really great place to be in where you're like, I'm aware of this. I'm aware it's going to be hard for them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a good mentality to be in.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Well, I don't want to take up any more of your time, but I so appreciate you doing this. It was so lovely to talk to you and I loved our conversation. And you are welcome back anytime because I feel like I could talk to you for like another 3 hours about all the things. So
yeah, totally.
Do you want to let our listeners know where they can find you?
On Instagram, that's where we're mostly active. Mm-hmm. We are at the_rare_life. And then we're also on Facebook, just the Rare Life Podcast. And then we have a website, which we're overhauling right now and restyling. So hopefully by the time, you know, people are listening to this, they can see a nice new website. But it is therarelife.org. And then just the podcast is just on like Spotify and Apple Podcasts and whatever. We have like seven platforms. Yeah, my husband does that. He's the one who like puts it all up on the
which is so cool. But I love that your husband's like involved.
Yeah,
it's been fun. Yeah.
My little tech guy.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And I'm going to link like all those episodes that I brought up in our show notes. And thank you so much, Madeline.
Thank you. That was so fun.
Yes. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. And another huge thanks to Madeline. All right, see you next time, guys. Bye.